Picture this. You're in love with this guy who is using you as a toy. You believe that he really does care about you.
Welcome back to the Nunnery Podcast.
Two more important men in your life, your brother and father, keep telling you that this boy is not good for you and to keep your legs closed. As they are mansplaining this situation to you in a condescending way, they are making you question the integrity, loyalty, and candor of your man. You are wondering what to do. At the next thing you know, he's a psycho and tells you to get thee to a nunnery. At one point, Laertes says, "For Hamlet and the trifling of his favor, hold it a fashion and a toy in blood, a violet in the youth of primy nature. Forward, not permanent, sweet, not lasting, the perfume and suppliance of a minute, no more." In this condescending lecture, Laertes displays his misogynistic tendencies by demeaning Ophelia into believing these hateful words.
As women, we are all too familiar with these types of lectures, most often given by men. In America, this may be the more prevalent and aggravating examples of misogyny, which shows the progress that the United States has achieved. However, in other countries, women are not allowed to drive or dress the way they want or speak or leave their house or have any rights of their own. In the grand scheme of things, mansplaining is not that big of a deal. For example, rape and sexual assault are some of the most extreme cases of misogyny there is. We'll explore the more serious cases later in this podcast, so stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Nunnery. I'm Mae Garofalo.
This is Deanna Riley.
And my name is Caitlin. We are three high school seniors who have noticed the heartbreaking misogyny that is so prevalent in the culture that girls grow up in today.
We will speak to teachers, coaches, and peers with firsthand experience to get different perspectives on misogyny, feminism, and rape culture. First, we'll talk with Mr. Miley, a high school English teacher at Country Day.
So, what is it like to be a male feminist?
Okay. Gosh, I don't know how to answer that. What it does feel like to me is that you start to get... you sometimes start to realize how little is expected of you in some ways because you're a man. Like, for instance, especially as a parent who is more involved or active in parenting and doing sort of parent things that people might normally associate with women, mm-hmm. the sort of looks and comments that you get from people who are sort of shocked or surprised that you're doing something that is just like what a person and a parent ought to do, but suddenly because you're male, it suddenly means like you're somehow going above and beyond because you like took your kids grocery shopping or something like that. And they could be like juggling knives in the produce aisle and people would be like, "Oh, you're such a good dad," you know? Whereas if my wife were out with them and they were perfectly docile, someone would still probably give her side eye for something, right?
Why do you think the male dominated status quo seems to persist?
Oh gosh. There's a lot of different ways to answer that. On the one hand, in King's Letter from a Birmingham Jail, right? The oppressor is never going to freely relinquish power, mm-hmm. right? It's going to have to be taken by the oppressed. Right. And so some of it is that, right? The patriarchy is not going to give up its power because it's so accustomed to it. Mm-hmm. And it's a set of a power structure where it benefits tremendously from this power imbalance.
This power imbalance that Mr. Miley is talking about relates to Shakespeare's Hamlet because of the control that Polonius and Laertes have over Ophelia's life and relationship with Hamlet. This example of control by the male figures in Hamlet relates to the patriarchy that is so prevalent in the world that we live in.
The bigger thing, I think, though, or maybe that's just where my head's at right now, it's profitable. Mm-hmm. People make a lot of money.
Misogyny is making money off in ad campaigns that claim to be quote-unquote girl power movements, when in fact all they want to do is make money.
So now you'll hear from football coach Joe Chango. Moving from a high school English teacher to a head football coach gives us two different views on misogyny and how it plays out in the life of a teenage girl. Coach Chango was very insightful in what he told us regarding misogynistic views that relate to athletics.
What is your opinion on letting girls play football?
I'd have no problem letting girls play football. There's logistical obstacles like locker room facilities and stuff like that, but other than that, I've actually coached teams where we've had girls on the team, I wasn't the head coach at the time, but I coached on a team where we had two girls that played for us. One of the girls was ultimately just not, just like one of the boys, wasn't very good, you know, just didn't get playing time. But we had another girl who was a good athlete. She was a pretty good receiver and played a lot of JV receiver for us. Her name was Nina. And so that was no issues. The biggest issue was just finding, you know, I go meet in the locker room with the guys, but the girls were changing somewhere else, and just making sure equipment would fit comfortably and fit well. But other than those obstacles, I have no objection to girls playing it. If they want to get involved with the sport, I think it's an awesome sport. I think it helps people become better people, so I'm all for it.
Why do you think that some people don't feel that girls should play football or boy sports in general?
It's a good question. I think there's a lot of people who just feel that the genders are different, period, right? That there's things boys can do that girls can't, and there's things girls can do that boys can't. I think that's always been part of society. I'm not saying it's right or legitimizing it, but it's just realistic. That's what's going on in society. Boys are supposed to play with trucks and girls are supposed to play with dolls. Like, there's these preconceived things that we put on kids, and there's these gender roles. So that's why I think most of people say, you know, girls shouldn't play because it's violent and it's this and it's that. But, you know, I think it shouldn't be a gender issue.
All right, now on a more serious note, we're going to share with you a personal story from a former classmate of ours who was brave enough to share her experience with sexual assault. Her story shows the most horrific form of misogyny that is unfortunately very common all around the world.
She has worked through her trauma to get to where she is today, extremely successful, accepted at an elite university, happy at boarding school, and at peace with herself and what happened to her.
In the past, I had experienced sexual assault at a young age, but when I tried to consult people, when I tried to tell people, I was kind of told, like, just cover it under the rug, like, don't really talk about it, don't, like, make it that big a deal, people aren't really supposed to know, that's something that's, like, embarrassing to you.
Right.
I was told, you know, and it kind of shut me down, I feel, because the family that I come from, they're super traditional and they're very selfless. So it was so rough to, be like, you just have to give and give to everyone else. And more importantly, you are the woman of the house. You will be a wife. You will be, you know, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And a young woman is supposed to, you know, always be forgiving, always be willing to give. That's what makes you a good person. Even if you end up with absolutely nothing in return, you just have to deal with it.
Right.
And that was the mentality that I was raised under. You know, you let other people talk and think for you. If you've been raised, like my family, the girls in my family were raised under that mentality, and that's how they survived.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were trying to instill that in me just to make sure I made it out okay.
Right.
But, you know, I'm at boarding school, so I got time to think, you know, for myself and be in my own area. And that's just not the kind of person I ever was. I do love people and I am giving, but I have standards. And I will not settle for anything less. And I think that's okay for me to have.
Right,
it's okay for me to be confident and just say what's on my mind. And I go see counseling, like, once or twice a week just to make sure that I'm in a good place. But I'm still, you know, I'm taking more breaks, you know, looking after myself a little bit more. But it's still very rigorous.
Right.
No matter where I go, there's always something to do. So I always think about the next step and what I've got to do to get things done.
Right.
Well, good for you. That's great.
Yeah, you said you worked really hard and everything. But how did you work through your trauma after what happened to you?
Oh, my goodness. I really did have to, at some point I talked to my mother and we kind of pushed it under the rug. We kind of went but then at some point we genuinely talked about it and I genuinely got to get all my emotions out with my mother and I could talk about it with my family and it didn't make us uncomfortable. They were at some point something had switched and they genuinely let me be open about it, let me recognize it, let me cry about it. And then once I got past those feelings, I had the time to introspect. I got to do a lot of introspection, and I really got to just make sure I was in a good place. Because when I was in that situation, I didn't, at some point I realized I didn't know what love was.
Similarly, Ophelia runs into these same issues when confronted by Laertes and Polonius. They confuse her into thinking that Hamlet is bad for her.
This causes major doubt in her and Hamlet's relationship, which makes Ophelia incapable of love.
Because this doubt has made its way into their relationship, Ophelia cannot see Hamlet for who she thought he was ever again.
It kind of warped my vision of what love was supposed to be and what romance was supposed to be and what it means to be giving and what standards are and all that. It warped all of it, so I really took time to decide what it meant for me.
Right, that makes sense. You said that when you were younger, you feel like your parents told you brush it under the rug and not talk about it. Why do you feel like, as a woman and women in general, are supposed to not talk about it and just brush it under the rug? Like, do you feel like all women think that?
I hope not all women think that. I hope we are past that point. But I know that the reason why they were saying it is because girls are, you know, they're not supposed to bring up trouble. They're supposed to be cute and polite and agreeable and just selfless, giving creatures. And that's like, and then also if you think about it, on a patriarchal scale, it's made for men to thrive. That is the priority of at least American society.
Mm-hmm.
And so for women to say, hey, actually, we can't have we've done wrong things, you've done bad things, and there are consequences to those actions. You said that there are consequences when you do bad things. Well, I'm saying that you've done a bad thing, it ruins that system. Because then you have to hold these men accountable, and they're sitting here like, well, then if we're held accountable, it takes us down a notch, and then we can't thrive. And so then that holds an issue. So, you know, men have sort of kind of taught women, you're not allowed to say anything. Your opinion doesn't matter. What you say, what you feel, what you do, it does not matter in comparison to me.
Do you think misogyny relates to your story at all?
I definitely think so. Even if it was supposed to be a message of, like, consideration and worry and concern, there was an undertone of misogyny in there. Whether it was intended or not, there was just a message of that. But, you know, keep quiet, don't start anything. Like, I remember being told, don't start anything, even though that was never my intention. But they'd assume that because something happened to me that I would potentially, you know, make so much noise about it. But I was worried about telling them.
Right.
You know, so they assumed that if something bad happened to me, you know, they had to know whether I was telling the truth. They had to know, you know, whether I was just trying to start something, and you know, we had to break all that down.
This is another example of misogyny that our peer went through. So many rape and sexual assault victims are silenced by their attackers, who are essentially taking away their voice.
This act of silencing women is just another way that men can take control. By taking away someone's ability to speak, attackers are stripping their victims of their power.
Here's the deal. Ophelia, she's dead. All because of men. Her father, Polonius, and her brother Laertes placed doubt in Ophelia's mind that caused her to question her relationship with Hamlet. This might seem like a play that was written millions of years ago, but it relates to so many issues and hot topics in today's society. That's why so many schools still read it.
Ophelia did not address the misogynistic aspects in her life because she had no one to talk to, no one looking out for her or giving her advice.
So for Mr. Miley, Coach Chango, and our former classmate, we have asked what their advice would be for girls our age dealing with misogyny. And they all pretty much said the same thing.
Call it out.
Call it out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just call it out, because that's, I know that also makes it sound like it's sort of your job to, like, nurture and educate hard-headed boys who don't know any better, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think that that is the primary function of calling it out. It's not like, oh, here's a teachable moment, like, sit down, boy, let me explain to you how this is wrong. But it's more about, you know, so some of what I've been saying is like kind of like economics, but also it's like, it's a way of seeing, and misogyny is a way of seeing the world. And what you're doing when you call someone out is that you're demanding to be seen differently, mm-hmm. and basically demanding to be seen. Because if you're on the receiving end of any sort of sexist or misogynistic treatment, you're basically not being seen.
Unfortunately, you're going to deal with it, and you're going to probably deal with it for the majority of your life. Now, we've been lucky that we're living in a time where women are being more vocal about where they're being wronged and where they feel harassed, and so that's awesome. And so I think that that's what your generation just needs to be more vocal about it and not put up with it and say that's something that we're going to change in society, and that we can go about our business and do X, Y, and Z and have nothing to do with our gender role or anything like that. So I think that's, you got to advocate for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just like anything, if you're a student here, you have to advocate for yourself. If you're a female out in the workplace, you have to advocate for yourself and say, you know, speak up when stuff like that happens and not allow it to happen. And don't allow, you know, there's going to be times when you're going to have to call out injustice and potentially put your job on the line or put something that you care about on the line. You have to be willing to do those things, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just accept it sometimes and then right. speak up when you don't want to. That doesn't work, you know. If you have to be consistent and say, well, no, I don't believe this is, there's a place for this in our society, and I'm going to continue to point out injustice wherever I see it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, for me, you know, everyone is handling, you know, I'm saying feminism just because that's what it is, Everyone handles their feminism very differently, but I feel like, remember that you matter, you are absolutely important, and take time to make sure you know that you are enough and that you deserve to live a wholesome and fulfilling life, but know that even if you don't get married, you are still enough. No matter what happens involving men, you are enough. You don't have to worry about whether you bring something to the table because you are the table. And you've been told to forget that for so long. So rekindle with your passions, rekindle with yourself, and realize you are your other half and you are enough and you can do whatever you put your mind to. You just have to hone in on that and hold standards and hold other people accountable. And don't hesitate when you want something or when you don't want something.
Thank you again for tuning in to The Nunnery. And just remember, you don't need to worry about bringing anything to the table, because you are the table.